This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Great to be back behind the microphone. Well, coming up, no vote today on Obamacare repeal and replace because GOP leaders still don't have the votes. Why? The chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Mark Meadows, is here to explain in just a moment. Also, day three in the Gorsuch nomination hearings. Should the left, who has used the courts as a uber legislature, should they be concerned about a Justice Neil Gorsuch? Well, CNS News editor-in-chief Terry Jeffrey has the answer to that question. And Students for Life are socking it to Planned Parenthood. And you can help. Tina Whittington, their executive vice president, explains how a little later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. All right. Yes, great to be back. I've been out for a couple of weeks traveling. A lot to cover. I'll fill you in on some of it. I just returned from Southern California from several events out there. Talk a little bit more about that later. But I want to first thank those that have set in for me and done a great job keeping Washington Watch, keeping a watch on Washington, keeping the program going. Dr. Piper out of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, always is great to have him on. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network. Sandy Rios does a super job filling in for me. She's, of course, morning host on AFR. And then my good friend Dr. Ronnie Floyd filling in for me while I was in Texas. So my thanks to them and my thanks to you for continuing to be a faithful listener of Washington Watch. We're going to keep you filled in on what is happening day in and day out here in Washington, D.C. and across the nation. We're going to get Mark Meadows on a little bit later. Talked to him earlier. Obviously, you know what's happening here. This is unfolding with the repeal and replace of Obamacare. The challenge is conservative members of the House are opposed to the replace portion of the repeal. Now, we've been talking about this for some time. My concern has always been that they're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole using the reconciliation. And I'm going to explain this because, in fact, I was talking with a doctor today and he said, you know, I don't think the GOP has done a good job of explaining the limitations of what they have to work with. Now, I know that on this program we've talked a lot about it, so you probably are in the know. But the budget reconciliation measure has some severe limitations on what can be done. Now, the reason it's the vehicle of choice is that it only requires 51 votes in the Senate. It gets by the filibuster, the 60-vote rule. Now, the limitations are that the reconciliation bill is a budgetary measure, and anything that's in that has to have a budgetary impact in terms of reducing the amount of money that the government spends. Anything outside of that is policy and cannot be put into the reconciliation bill. Now, the process is it goes over to the Senate and it goes, there's a Byrd rule from former Senator Byrd, who was in the Senate forever. And they call it the Byrd rule because there's certain parameters, the parliamentarian rules on whether or not these measures are budgetary in nature. And if they're not, it goes through what's called a bird bath. Yes, I know. And so it's washed out and it doesn't stick. That's been part of the concern that we have, I have, the Family Research Council has, and that we have not taken a public position for or against the bill. We've only been working to address certain issues pertaining to life. Because of the way it was originally structured, it was going to result in actually more taxpayer funding of abortion than Obamacare. Now, to their credit, the House leadership listened, and they've changed it, and they've tweaked it. And so coming out of the House, I'm pretty comfortable with the language regarding life. But the problem is that I'm not sure I'm optimistic, but not sure that it survives the Byrd rule in the in the Senate if it's challenged, and it will be challenged. So I'm optimistic but not confident, and so therefore I've told leadership the way the bill's structured, we can't score in favor of it because we're not certain what the final bill will look like. Because once it goes over to the Senate, it's radically altered, and if the life provisions are dropped, then we can't support it. I said the same thing to the president and the vice president last week. I had the opportunity before I headed out to the West Coast to meet with the vice president, spend about an hour with him, had an opportunity to go in and spend some time with the president. We spoke about this and a number of issues, including religious liberty. But we spoke about the whole Obamacare and the pro-life aspects of it, and they're aware of it and working hard to resolve it. There are some other concerns that conservative Republicans have about whether or not this will ultimately drive down the health care premiums. And I share that concern. I share that concern because there are key provisions that are market-based provisions that can't fit into this replace because of the vehicle, again, reconciliation. So you'd say, well, what's the alternative? Well, here's the alternative that we have been talking about from the very beginning. Go back to the 2015 repeal bill that passed both the House and the Senate. Now, I know there are a few members, new members to Congress that didn't vote on that, but it did pass both House and Senate, and Barack Obama vetoed it. Now, that does not have any of the replace portions. You would have to come back with a standalone, separate bill that would have to cross the 60-vote threshold in the Senate. Now, the moderate Republicans in particular are concerned, saying, well, we don't know that we can get that through. And if that happens, and then we repeal Obamacare, and then we don't have a replacement, it's going to be disastrous for us at the polls. Well, first off, Obamacare is going to implode. All right, whether or not they expedite it by gutting it through the reconciliation bill or they allow it to implode under its own weight, it's going to happen. All right, I mean, you've got these providers that are pulling out, insurance providers are pulling out of the exchanges because it's not working. They're losing money. So you use political pressure, which this president, I believe, still has a lot of. And he goes into, you know, say 10 Democratic states that he won, or states that he won that have Democratic senators, and apply political pressure and force them to vote on a bill that is a comprehensive, well thought out plan that would replace the disaster called Obamacare. Because here's what's going to happen. If you don't address these core issues that are market-based principles, which are hard to do anyway in today's healthcare system because the government's so intertwined and intertangled in it, so tangled up in government regulation and so on and so forth. But you can do some things that you've probably been hearing about going across state lines, allowing individuals, groups to pool across state lines so you have bigger groups. Bigger groups mean you share the liability, the burden, the risk, driving down premiums. That's one way. It's a market-based approach, one market-based approach. Because in 2 years, it's not going to happen in the year, this coming year, because right now the rates are fixed. Nobody's going to see any relief from this when it's passed, because basically you're stuck with this for at least a year. Next year, though, if the proper replacement plan is put in place, you could see reductions in your premiums. Now, if we don't really fundamentally change anything, we simply change the way the reimbursements, instead of it being a government direct payment, and we make it a refundable tax credit, and we drop the individual mandate, which is what this does, the penalty, and the employer penalty, we drop that. Okay, fine, but it really doesn't fundamentally change the delivery system. All right. It doesn't address a lot of the problems that are creating issues. So, bottom line, it's unlikely that you will see a reduction in your premium 2 years from now unless these core principles are changed. And that's what this conservative group, the Freedom Caucus, has been meeting with the White House. In fact, they met earlier today with the president, urging for some, you know, fundamental changes that will lead to a reduction in the premium cost. Because if not, the American people in you know, 18 months are going to look at it and say, wait a minute, I'm not any better off than I was no better off than I was under the Obamacare regime. So that's what this is all about. This is not really a power play. This is about conservatives who are market-based conservatives that understand basic economics. Mark Meadows, he was set to come on. We still may catch him before the end of the program, but he got called to the speaker's office. He's doing all the negotiations for the conservatives, and so he is a man that is in demand, put it that way. But I've spoken to him earlier today, and they're solid. They have a solid block of votes that are not budging until fundamental changes are made to the replacement plan, so that, in fact, we could have a pathway forward to reducing the cost that individual Americans will pay when it comes to acquiring health insurance. So that's what this is about. Again, as I said, our issues have been focused to ensure that this is a, while I have concerns over the economic aspects of it, and I clearly support what Congressman Meadows and the Freedom Caucus is doing, we have been focused like a laser on the life issues. And I, again, want to commend the House leadership, in particular my friend Steve Scalise, who has worked diligently to ensure that what comes out of the House will be a pro-life bill. The question is, does it survive the birdbath in the Senate? I think it does. And at that point, we will come out in favor of it. But until that happens and we know for certain what the final language will be, we're withholding public support or opposition. But I'm optimistic. And again, I want to be very, very clear that the House leadership, the White House, the Vice President, the President, totally committed to making sure that Americans are not forced into partnering with the abortion industry. No question about that. So my thanks to them, and it is refreshing to have a pro-life administration in America. And I'll talk a little bit more later about my visit with the president and the vice president. Little bit of information. It was a week ago Monday that I met with him. That was the first cabinet meeting that the president had. And I want to tell you a little story about that a little bit later here on Washington Watch. All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. I am glad to be back. I had a great time with my wife as we celebrated our 31st wedding anniversary. Might talk a little bit about that as well. Coming back, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
American Family Radio, impacting America.
Yes, my name is Marilyn from Oklahoma, and I recently ran for state representative here in the state of Oklahoma. I had a feeling or a calling that God wanted me to do that after having been a listener of Sandy Rios and Tony Perkins. They both really made an impression on my heart, and I felt that God was calling me to run, and I did. And although I lost, I felt like I was obedient to his call, and I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep trying to fight for this state and for this country. Thank you very much for what y'all do.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon beginning April 4th.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, yes, it is at T Perkins. All right, the Senate Judiciary Committee is wrapping up the confirmation hearing for Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Now, Gorsuch concluded testifying yesterday. Today's hearing featured outside witnesses speaking for and against the Colorado federal judge. I've done that once before, back during the Obama reign. I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee against one of his appointees for their attacks on religious freedom. But anyway, here to help us review how the hearings have gone thus far, Editor-in-Chief of CNSNews.com, Terry Jeffrey. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great to have you on. Hey, I want to get, first off, I want to just get your quick overview of how you think the hearings have gone. Then I want to go a little bit deeper into an article that you wrote today, which I thought was very insightful. And exposes the concerns that the left has. So far, how do you think it went?
I think that what we've seen is Judge Gorsuch, obviously, is a very intelligent person. He's extremely well-versed in the law. I also think he's very careful and very political. I'll have to say, personally, my confidence that he would be a Scalia-like judge has not been reinforced by his performance in the hearing.
Now, explain that. Why?
Well, you know, one thing, you know, I think that one thing that characterizes the late Justice Scalia and Clarence Thomas and Alito, who I think were the three best judges on the court before Scalia died, now we have Alito and Clarence Thomas left, was a passion for the truth. And I think you saw that in speeches that Antonin Scalia would make outside the court. I think you saw it in Justice Alito, when he came up in his confirmation hearing, was brutally attacked by the left. And I think you saw it in Clarence Thomas after he was attacked in the Anita Hill scandal. And it was predictable that those gentlemen were going to be great justices. I don't think that's as predictable of Judge Gorsuch, unfortunately.
Now, I do think, I was not around when Scalia went through his confirmation hearing. But I do think there's probably an element of freedom that comes after the confirmation hearing that enables them to speak more freely on their own thoughts, although still guarded. I mean, even Scalia has been guarded because I think, remember, he recused himself on a case. Was it the Ten Commandments or a flag case? I can't remember what it was. He ended up recusing himself because he had spoken out on that particular issue.
Right. Well, no, it's true, especially after what they did to Bob Bork when he was nominated by President Reagan to the Supreme Court back in the 1980s. Bob Bork went into the committee and was very honest. He was candid. He was intellectually honest. He actually expressed his views.
Which is something, that's not welcomed in Washington, D.C. Honesty that is not something that most there in Washington have an appreciation for.
No, and the Democrats in the Senate used it against them. They were able to block, he forced them to have a vote. They actually, because they controlled the Senate then, were able to block his confirmation. And the end result was we ended up with Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court, who, by the way, Gorsuch was a clerk for Anthony Kennedy as well as for Byron White. And he sung high the praises of Anthony Kennedy. He wrote the Obergefell decision declaring that same-sex marriage is a right. Gorsuch was going out of his way yesterday in the committee to make sure that people understood how much he admired and respected Anthony Kennedy, who, by the way, Tony, is also the justice who wrote the opinion in Pennsylvania v. Casey, which reaffirmed Roe v. Wade. He claimed a legal right to an abortion. I do think that Gorsuch he's a very smart guy, understands the law. He's also very political and very careful.
Yeah, and there's always an element of the unknown. I do not question that whatsoever, and there's been some things that that give me some pause. However, when I look at his natural law view, look at the fact that he is a textualist, he has repeatedly said that he abides by the Constitution. It's not the role of judges to create law, but simply to interpret. And you pointed to something in your piece out yesterday regarding Dianne Feinstein and her trying to get him to say something about his view of assisted suicide. And you made a point of it that the relevance of that to the whole life issue could unravel for them if they have a justice with this viewpoint.
It could. Years ago, now Judge Gorsuch wrote, and I understand that it was his doctoral dissertation, basically, from Oxford, that ended up being published by the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy, and then eventually he wrote a book that was published by Princeton University Press on the future of euthanasia and assisted suicide. And in those writings, but in the book, which was the latest iteration of it, he flat out says that there's an exceptionless norm against the intentional taking of human life by private persons. Now, note, he did not say taking a person's life. He said taking human life.
Right.
And, of course, in the 14th Amendment and in the Roe v. Wade decision, the word person was instrumental in the question. Basically, they were saying an unborn baby was not a person. They'd have a pretty hard time arguing that an unborn baby isn't a human being. So it's telling, I think, that in that writing, Gorsuch says the intentional taking of a human life is always wrong. So he explained that book, that principle in the book, Tony. He does it in his argument for natural law leaves God out of it, which I don't like. Mm-hmm. People have made arguments for why he does that. He also edits the word creator out of his quotations of the Declaration of Independence. I don't like that either. I mean, I think it's interesting that his view of natural law is to the left of Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, at least, conceded there was a creator who gave us the right to life. In his book, Gorsuch doesn't do that. But he says by just reason alone, we can determine that life itself is a self-evident value. It's not an end to something. It's a value in itself, and that you cannot deliberately take a human life. Now, he also argues that the 14th Amendment in the Constitution, by giving equal protection to all persons, reflects and enshrines that law in the Constitution. And in other writings and in statements, he's argued that Antonin Scalia's originalist argument for the Constitution, that it means what the people who framed the language meant it to mean, not what we want it to mean today. If you put all those things together, that the 14th Amendment incorporates that principle that you can never deliberately take an innocent life, and you're an originalist, then you'd have to say that Roe's got to go. And so I think that if Gorsuch is consistent with his own arguments, he would have to vote to reverse Roe.
I think you are correct. Terry, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, Students for Life, socking it to Planned Parenthood, and you can help. We'll tell you how when we return.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
We did get existing home sales numbers, and unfortunately, surprisingly, they dropped 3.7% month over month. That's a pretty significant drop. They were looking for 5.55 million, and we got 5.48 on an annual rate. So that is a considerable drop. And later on this week, we're going to get new home sales as well. So we'll see what happens there. Also, mortgage applications fell 2.7%. last week, which would stand to reason since home sales are down. But in the middle of all this, the median existing home price went up 7.7%. So we'll see. This was a little bit surprising. Of course, it is a February number, and everybody expects it to be down a bit, but this was a little bit lower than what everybody expected. Oil prices are lifted a little bit as a result of the inventories of gasoline dropping. Of course, inventories in crude oil up dramatically, but here's the deal. Everybody believes that once the refineries get off the maintenance programs that they go through every winter, that they will be drawing down the overabundant supply of oil fairly soon, and that's going to be good for oil prices. Problem is that we still have a demand problem in oil. So the idea that even if we draw down inventories, that it's going to stay down is lunacy. It's going to be right back up again by the end of summer.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. All right, a lot more to come. But first, Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion vendor, is really facing the very real possibility of being defunded of close to $500 million a year that they currently receive from the federal government, actually your tax dollars. That is a part of this health care plan, Obamacare. It was in the 2015 replace or repeal bill, and it is in this one once again. It's something we advocated for. In fact, I worked with Steve Scalise to get it in the bill in 2015, and it's back in there. And so Planned Parenthood, they're going crazy. They realize that they could very well lose this money. And you shouldn't think that it's going to happen because they have, I mean, it's a huge organization. I mean, over $1 billion a year, and they use a lot of that money to lobby. They use a lot of that money to give money to legislators through their political giving. So Pro-Life Millennials at Students for Life has launched a nationwide campaign to demonstrate the destruction that Planned Parenthood leaves in its wake so that no one has a question whatsoever about Planned Parenthood. Joining us to talk about it is Tina Whittington, who is the Executive Vice President. Tina, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony. I really appreciate it.
Okay, tell our folks about what you're doing to draw awareness to what Planned Parenthood does.
Well, basically, we're going to sock it to Planned Parenthood. So we know Planned Parenthood aborted 323,999 children in the last year. And like you said, they did that while raking in more than $500 million of our taxpayer dollars. And we just want to stand up and say enough is enough. And so we want to send 323,999 baby socks to Congress, representing the voiceless victims of Planned Parenthood and calling on our elected officials to defund the abortion Goliath. There are so many great organizations that are working on efforts with, like you said, the repeal and replace plan, different efforts for defunding Planned Parenthood. But we want to show Congress that there is an overwhelming majority of momentum to see this finally happen. And so we're just excited. We've got this started out, a student was pinning socks on campus to bring awareness about the voiceless victims of abortion, and we were like, that is such an excellent idea, because who doesn't think of a baby when they see a baby sock, right?
Absolutely.
And it just really ties in kind of in all the debates and conversations. I think we've really lost sight of the fact that Planned Parenthood aborts purposes to end the life of these innocent children. So we want to be their voice, and we want to demonstrate to Congress that this is something that has momentum and that people can stand behind. So we're encouraging everyone to send us their socks. You can go to socket2pp.com, and you can sign a message to Congress, pledge to send a sock, and then we want you to pin a sock on. So we have students across the country who are pinning them on their backpacks to start these conversations about these voiceless victims and the importance of defunding Planned Parenthood. We have people in churches working to do sock drives. We, so far, in just a few days, we have over 8,000 socks coming in and pledged, but we have a short period of time where we can work hard to meet this goal and really, I mean, can you even imagine? This is like dump trucks full of socks that we're going to be bringing to Congress. What a visual that will be for them to really see Planned Parenthood has this dramatic impact on the preborn.
Well, folks, I think this is a great idea. In fact, I saw this that Kristen Hawkins had announced this prior to me heading out on my road trip. And so I said, I want to hold this story until I get back. And I wanted Tina to come on and talk about this because I want you to know, I think this is a great idea. I think it's creative. It's something everybody can do. And I like the idea, especially Tina, of having people on college campuses, young folks, going ahead and pinning one of those socks to their backpack so they can start that conversation about it, because that's what this is about. It's about having a conversation, one with our elected officials, that, hey, enough is enough, but also in the culture and letting people know what's at stake here.
It's amazing, especially millennials. A lot of them, over half, don't even know that Planned Parenthood provides abortions. And so when we can sort of force that conversation to happen by the simple act of pinning on a sock, we bring people over to our pro-life position slowly but surely. When they see, wow, Planned Parenthood performs that many abortions, I didn't know. It changes people's perspective about the abortion Goliath and gets them to understand the importance of really why we need to defund Planned Parenthood now.
Mm-hmm. Well, give us that website again.
Yeah, it's sock, S-O-C-K, IT, number 2, PP.com, socket2pp.com. And when you go in there and you sign a message to Congress, we have these awesome digital toolkits so that you can come up with great outreach ideas and, you know, posters and some different things that you can download and do a sock drive on your campus, do a sock drive with your church. We have bulletin inserts for churches just to really get this word out. We are planning an event on April 25th. To display these socks, and so we really need them to come in quick so we can have the biggest voice possible to Congress.
All right, Tina, we'll do our part. Thanks so much. Great job. Great job.
Thank
great
you, Tony.
Great creative team. Now, if I had been a part of that creative team, I probably wouldn't have come up with the idea of a sock. I probably would have said send a diaper to Congress or something like that. But I think it's a great idea.
Thank you.
And folks, I want to encourage you to participate in this. Now, go, if you didn't catch that website, go to TonyPerkins.com. We got a link there. You can follow it over. All right, when we come back, we continue our conversation about all things today and what's been happening. And so don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. Again, if you you missed that, Socket 2, Planned Parenthood, how you can participate, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Also, still room on the voyage to Alaska. If you'd like to join us, there's more information there at TonyPerkins.com the end of August. Going to have a great time. Actually, not the end of August. It's the beginning of August. Anyway. Check out that at the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I want to go back to a couple of things here. Mark Meadows may join us. I don't know. We were texting back and forth. He's in with the House Speaker, so I don't know if he's going to be able. They're in the midst of negotiations. But basically, it's what I told you earlier. That's where things stand. I want to go back to something that we talked about with Terry Jeffrey. Because you're going to hear a lot about this, and I think you're going to hear a lot about it. We're hearing such about it, the issue of natural law. And liberals don't like natural law because natural law is really it's moral law. It is what Paul talks about in Romans chapter 2. It's what's inscribed upon man's hearts. Even though they didn't have the law, they operated as if they knew the law. Because it's natural law is reflective of those things that are wrong in all places, at all times, for all people. For instance, murder, basically wrong everywhere. Stealing, wrong everywhere. That's natural law. And so you don't really need positive law or statutory law to tell you that. Now we reinforce it. But that's kind of the natural law theory. These are things that are evident of themselves. You can arrive at them without the requirement of it being written down. Now, there's a heavy overlap between, like the Ten Commandments. Part of those are moral law that reflect how God made us, to know certain things are just inherently wrong. Things are inherently good. So on and so forth. So, but the left hates that. That was something that came up with Justice Thomas back during his confirmation hearing, because they've tried to basically drive the whole concept of natural law from our judicial system and base it all upon positive law. Positive law being man-made, created law that has no foundation, essentially. But natural law is, again, you can think of it in terms of moral law. And then, as Terry made reference to, he didn't say anything, Gorsuch in his writings didn't say anything about God. The founders, when you go back and they talk about of the laws of nature and nature's God, that is the same concept of natural law and its correlation with moral law, the laws of God. And that's why liberals are so concerned about that. So I remain very optimistic. One of the reasons is that the vice president has played a key role in the vetting and the discussion with these judicial nominees, and I feel very confident on where Mike Pence is when it comes to wanting a judge that will simply interpret the Constitution, not try to take the role of Congress and not try to execute the responsibilities of the executive branch, but simply interpret the law. And so I feel pretty confident. As Terry pointed out, there are certain things that, you know, remain unknown. It's hard to know for certain, but I feel feel as confident as you can. No guarantees in this business. No guarantees whatsoever, but we shall see. So we'll be watching as he moves to the full Senate for confirmation, and then I feel pretty confident he will be confirmed. The big fight is going to be over the next Supreme Court justice. We've talked about this. This just maintains the current balance of the court, filling in for Scalia. It is it's nothing that changes the balance of the court, but the next one will. And so that's where you're going to see the real fight. And they're not going to want to do that this time because they want to try to set a precedent with the Republicans having to go and use this this 60-vote threshold for judicial nominees. This didn't exist back in the first part of the Bush administration. And it was when the Democrats gained control of the Senate, they applied the 60-vote rule to judicial nominees and presidential appointments, which had not previously existed. It was the 60-vote filibuster is what on legislation, but had not been in place on judicial nominees. So they're afraid that the Republicans are going to change the rules. And so they're wanting to try to set a precedent. I believe you'll see enough Democrats come aboard where he'll get more than 60 votes for approval. We'll watch it. Won't have long to wait. And it's important because there's a lot of important cases coming up before the Supreme Court that we're going to want a full court. Because what happens if they end up with a 4-4 tie, the lower court ruling remains. So very, very important. All right, folks, you're listening to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I mentioned earlier that a week ago Monday, before the snowstorm was coming to D.C., and I was heading out west to California for a series of events, I met in the White House with the vice president to discuss a number of issues. But one of the things he was telling me, he said, hey, today was the president's first cabinet meeting. I said, really? He said, yeah, the majority of the cabinet was there, and they met, and they had an agenda. They met for about an hour. And the first thing on the agenda, the president called for prayer. And he called upon the vice president to pray. And so the first cabinet meeting, the first thing was prayer. And the vice president, Mike Pence, prayed for the president, prayed for the cabinet, prayed for men and women in harm's way and our military, and prayed for the country. And then after the prayer was over, the president looked at the attorney general and said, now it's up to you to decide whether or not that's legal. Joking, of course. So he does have a sense of humor. But it was good to be back. I hadn't been to the White House for about 8 years. Surprise, surprise. And spent a good bit of time, again, talking with the vice president. Shares our views, you know, on practically everything. And lot happening. Of course, internationally, we're watching this. This stuff is unfolding very rapidly. So I want to encourage you. And he was encouraging me to encourage you to continue to pray for him and for the president, for the administration. And they're, I'm telling you what, they're in a battle. And again, I don't agree with everything, but I will tell you that this administration is 1,000 times better than the alternative that we would have. And I remain very optimistic. And you are going to hear on this program from time to time, there are things that I just disagree with. And you know, the vice president knows that. We've disagreed on some things before. But I think 95% of the time, 90% of the time, 95% of the time, we're going to be in agreement with what they're trying to do as an administration. So I want to encourage you to pray for the president, pray for the vice president, because they are the left is trying to stop them at every turn. I mean, I mean, think back 8 years ago. Did the media give Barack Obama this much grief when he was elected? No, they never did. Basically gave him a pass his entire 8 years. And the media is determined to stop the Trump administration and calls them to fail. All the more reason that when they're doing the right thing, we've got to be there to support them and to help advance the issues that they're working on. I still want to encourage you, we the issue of religious liberty, that was the thing I expressed to the president. And, of course, he brought up the Johnson Amendment that they're committed to that. And I 100% applaud that. I mean, I've served for the last several years as the honorary chairman of the Alliance Defending Freedom's Pulpit Freedom Initiative effort, which would allow pastors to speak freely by removing the Johnson Amendment from the IRS, from the tax code. So we're all committed to that, working with Steve Scalise and others to introduce the legislation, James Lankford in the Senate. So we're going to get that done. I think that's going to happen. But we've got to be even more aggressive on the issue of religious freedom to make up for the ground that was lost during the Barack Obama years. And so we're going to continue to bring that message to the White House. And as we do, we need your help. We need you to help us from time to time as we call upon you to get you to respond to petitions or different initiatives, calling your members of Congress. We've got to keep this issue front and center. There's a narrow window of time that we have to address this, and it's now. I'm not sure how long the window will be open, but we've got to move through it quickly. Because religious freedom is fundamental. It's critical. And that's the ability to live our lives according to our faith. It includes the ability to preach the gospel. I know there are some pastors say, you know what, I don't get involved in politics and public policy. I'm just going to preach the gospel. Well, your ability to preach the gospel is so that people hear the gospel and they come to an understanding of the truth. And why do we want them to come to an understanding of the truth? It's so that they have everlasting life. You see, when you come to know the Savior, you come to a realization that, you know what, you can't make it on your own. And as you come to that realization, it's through, as Paul talked about, how will they know unless someone preaches the word? And how will they hear? Well, they will only hear when there's preachers. And part of the transformation is not just for saving someone so that they will spend eternity in heaven. Obviously, that's a high priority. But it's so they live a transformed life now. And so unless we have religious freedom in this country, we have people come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, but yet they cannot live outside the four walls of the church according to their faith. It's not what the founders envisioned or fought for, certainly not what the Pilgrims had in mind, and it's not what our Constitution allows for. It allows for us to live our lives according to our faith. And that's what we're going to advocate for each and every day, and we need your help in doing it. And one of the ways to do it is take this opportunity, this new opportunity we have in reclaiming our country, to live out your faith as a Christian. Don't shrink back. Don't be silent. Speak the truth in love. I was, as I was out in California this week, I mentioned my wife and I took a couple of days to celebrate our 31st wedding anniversary. Had a great time in Southern California just being with my wife. Love my wife. So blessed to have her. And it was just great to be able to spend some time just her and I. Just we went bike riding, talking, walking, eating pizza, just having a great time. But this past weekend, I was with my good friend, Pastor Jack Hibbs, Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. Great church in Chino Hills, California. Did their three services Sunday, and it was, I tell you, it was such a blessing. You think of California, you think of liberals, you think of radicals, but there are so many good people in California that are fighting for their religious freedom, to be able to live their lives according to their faith, and the folks doing it in very dark places. And so, you know, many of you that are listening to this program live in places where it's not difficult. You don't have government policies working against you. You don't have school policies that force boys and girls to use the same showers and restrooms. Don't let it happen. Advocate for what is right, what is basic common sense, but what is moral. We've got to speak up, or a lot of America could become like California. But we had a great time, again, with the Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. In fact, about three dozen people made professions of faith. It was just great to be there and to see God at work, even in California. But folks, this is a unique time in which we live. And I believe God has given us a reprieve, but you and I must take this opportunity and use it to chase away the darkness. Don't just light candles. I mean, it's time to light some torches and not just let the darkness be scared away, but we need to chase it away. And you can do that right where you are. You can be a part of lighting a torch and chasing away the darkness by speaking the truth wherever you are, in the workplace, in the school, on the college campus. Be bold. Be courageous. Take a stand for what is right. Well, folks, great to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Stay tuned. Keep tracking what's happening in Washington, D.C. A lot's going to be unfolding in the days ahead, and we're going to keep you connected so that you can make a difference and you can take your stand. And remember what the Apostle Paul says: when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken that stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.